after the timeout. Holmes will now try again. A 42-yard field goal out of the hold of Austin Fisher. There's the snap and hold. Kick on the way by Metton. End over end. And it is good!
Dix. Marching Murdoch. In motion. He's got the football now. Across the 20. 15. 10. 5. Touchdown, Iowa State.
This is Down the Pipe and Natty Light.
Welcome, Cyclone fans, to another episode of Down the Pipe and Natty Light. As always, I'm your host, Levi Stevenson, joined again by J.D. Wagner and Marchie Murdoch. How's it going, guys?
It is going good right now.
Fantastic.
birthday tomorrow.
Oh,
not
yeah.
doing anything crazy. So
by the time everyone's listening to this, it'll be Marchie's birthday. So birthday, everyone wish him a good birthday on the Twitter and stuff.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. So this episode is going to be pretty much kind of a season recap and sort of a to start the bridge into spring football, really. Looking at season recap, look at kind of guys a little bit, maybe talk about some of the guys coming in next year, stuff like that. I'm sure we'll end up touching on, you know, kind of how we transitioned into 2022 and stuff like that. But going to be a season recap this time, so... Some of it's going to be good, and some of it's probably not going to be a lot of fun. But we're gonna work our way through it a little bit.
Most of it's probably not going to be fun.
Yeah, most of it's not going to be a lot of fun. But we are gonna get into it after we say thank you to our sponsors at Stotts Bar and Grill in Ames. Those guys have been awesome for us for a long, long time. Taco Tuesday, Burger Wednesday, FAC specials on Friday. Football season's not going on anymore, but they do still have specials during basketball games. And things like that. Always a great place to watch that stuff. So definitely head on over there for some delicious food and drinks, whatever you're looking for, a snack or in, you know, to quench your thirst. So let's do we want to start at the back end and work our way, or do we want to start at the beginning and work our way this way?
Well, I don't care.
Let's just start at the beginning.
Okay. Oh, God.
Yeah. So this season, we came in with some pretty significant expectations. One of the things that was a common thread throughout the offseason, no matter whether you talk to an Iowa State fan, national thing, whatever, is that Iowa State was going to be a playoff contender. Or had a chance to be a playoff contender. Looking back, it's easy to say, well, those were too high. Those expectations were too high. But if we're going to try not to use the hindsight bias at the beginning of the season, do we still think that it was fair to say that we were contenders for the playoff at the beginning of the season?
No.
I would say we had potential. So I kind of thought it. I didn't necessarily think that we could match up. Like, let's just say, for instance, if we got in, I thought we'd get, like, I didn't know. I didn't think there was a possibility that we'd be, like, in the national championship game. But I did think with our schedule, I felt it was very favorable.
I thought, based on last season, yes, it was a funky season. Everyone was going through COVID. I thought our program showed an elite discipline that we didn't have any COVID cases throughout the season. We didn't have any players that had to miss. We didn't have to miss any games. And we did what we normally do, which is play at an elite level late in the season. However, and I'm not taking anything away from the Fiesta Bowl win, I would be dishonest if I didn't think there was a big asterisk on that, because that Oregon team wasn't very good, I don't think. The Pac-12 was littered with COVID cases. And I forget who Oregon took the place of to get in the Pac-12 championship game, but they won that against USC, I think, in an empty stadium, which has a huge factor. You know, I mean, look at at Jack Trice this season. I mean, we lost to Iowa, and that's it. That was our only loss in Jack Trice this year, and against a very good Oklahoma State team. Congrats on the festival win against TCU, Texas, Kansas, and you and I. So having fans in the stands does make a massive difference. And I don't know if it would have made that much of a difference that year. That's neither here nor there. We can't really go back in time and assume that. But I was just confused. And I feel like I'm beating a dead horse because we've talked about this over and over again. But we had every ounce. I don't know what other incentive we could have had to want to come and do better this year. Everyone came back, you know, and I asked a question before the Oklahoma game. Why did everybody come back if the goal was not to win every game on our schedule? Why was the goal, you know, you're getting ready to play in the biggest Cy-Hawk game in the history of the series, and we shit our pants. You know, we still have a chance to get to the Big 12 championship after the horrible loss to West Virginia. And then we break down and lose. We let Texas Tech score 41 points on us. And then Oklahoma, you know, we had that unnecessary turnover at the end of the first half that led to 7 points. We lost by 7 points. And then the Clemson game, I'm debating what I want to say about that. Yet.
So the reason I asked that first question was because how you view how we think Iowa State should have been fairly predicted at the beginning of the season affects and helps us determine if we think if it's a massive disappointment, is it a little bit of a disappointment? Is it kind of where we thought it should be?
I don't think we were prepared for it. I don't think we were mentally prepared for it because I think, again, I thought we got entitled. You know, people are coming in, oh, it's Iowa State, they're on the rise, they're ranked 7th, we got to be afraid of them. Well, I've said this, or at least I've thought it since probably week 8, the Baylor Bears were the most complete team in the Big 12, which I hate, and they weren't afraid of anyone, they made very few mistakes, they didn't turn the ball over, they had a below-average quarterback that they won the Big 12 championship with, and the Sugar Bowl. They had a fantastic season by playing disciplined football. Baylor didn't care that we were at the time. We were ranked 14th. You know, they came and they whipped our ass. And so we lost by 2, but I still consider that an ass whooping. So I don't think we were mentally ready for the show that we were getting ready to be placed on.
So as I look back, I think it was fair to say that Iowa State had a shot at the Big 12 title and had a shot at the playoff and stuff like that. I think it was totally fair to say that.
At the very least.
I think one thing that we got missed, though, partly because the national media was also kind of gassing us up, and I think it got hard to really break it down and to really be realistic about it at times.
I don't know. It still comes down to us being able to do the little things correctly that we did the previous year.
Yeah, and that is a point that I do want to get into later in this because it's been a bit of annoyance for me for a little bit. But I think it would have been good at this season too, and it was a thought that crossed my mind, but I probably didn't maybe parrot that narrative as much as I probably wanted to or should have, is that it was still been a good idea to sit back with a healthy dose of skepticism, just because 2020 was a weird year, and I think we tried to make it seem less weird than it was. And like the huge wins over Kansas State and West Virginia in 2020 looked really good, obviously awesome to have. But you know, were they representative of Iowa State being that much better than either of those two teams? I don't know.
Well,
it's hard to say.
Kansas State and
West Virginia were both very shorthanded for both of those games.
Yeah, granted, I didn't think it was going to be 45-0.
No, I mean, I think even if they were full strength, I'm not sure that. I mean, I think Iowa State still wins both of those games, even if both Kansas State and West Virginia are at full strength. But You know, are they the crazy blowouts that distort perception? Probably not. So, and the weird thing too is that we came in with those preseason expectations. Then you have the UNI game, and it's close. It's really close, and we all kind of wrote it off and say, you know, UNI is a good team, though it's a hard team to play. It's week one. Things are going to be kind of dumb or whatever. But the problem is we didn't know this till later in the season, but a lot of the same things that showed up against UNI still showed up against Texas Tech. They were still there. And they never grew up to be a really consistently great team. They had their spurts, obviously, like Kansas State, where they kicked their ass, stuff like that. And they showed that they were capable of doing it. But
I think it's just a mental deal, man, because it's on paper, and I'm just comparing our 2017 team. Granted, 8-5, yeah, it's a good season, but it's nothing to freak out about. However, I think that's if you played out that season 100 times, I'd say that'd be ranked in the top 20 or top 10 of possible. Standings that we are.
There's a lot of close games there. That TCU game could have gone a different way.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'd like to
Oklahoma. Yeah,
of course. No, I focus on, and being a competitor, I always focus on how the losses could have been different, but the wins could have been a lot different. You know, let's just say Jacob Park doesn't lose his head, and Kyle never plays. If Kyle doesn't play, that October never happens. And agreed. I thought Jacob Park was the biggest bum ever. He had a fantastic talent, a great arm, but a bum. And I thought he was an okay dude. I didn't like him. I didn't like him. I thought he was selfish. I didn't freaking like him. And he constantly skipped out of workouts or tried to, you know, all this crap, just little stuff you don't see out of a leader. That stuff like Joel Lanning, you know, went from quarterback to linebacker. Now he's built like it, so he gets away with it. He's not built like Kyle, a freaking string bean. But, you know, he was about 240. He had to learn a whole nother defense. And
yeah,
it worked out. You know, it did. But it's just we kind of had that mindset where we didn't care who we had on the field. We didn't care what the situation was. You're going to get our very, very best no matter what the circumstance is.
It was kind of a you guys versus the world type of thing.
Yeah, and we took that on full-heartedly because we depended on each other and only us. And I feel like these guys just kind of expected stuff like the pass rush. You know, I'm watching us kind of, you know, play patty cake, and everyone's just waiting for Will to go make a play or Will to flush the quarterback out, and then something happens. God forbid, Texas Tech game, Will gets hurt. All of a sudden, we have no pass rush. And so it's just kind of like we depend. We went all in on like four or five players, and if they didn't have statistically outstanding games, then it seemed that we just fell apart. And I don't know. And I could be wrong with that, but that's just what I noticed. This is a different energy that our team didn't have. I don't know. Mark may have a different opinion on that.
March has been sitting over here. I've been kind of watching him. He's been kind of sipping his drink and just kind of stewing in his thoughts. I've been watching him.
Everything y'all said was right. I disagree. Like JD, you're my boy. I like Jacob. He could be difficult, but I also saw the good in Jacob. So you know, everybody has their own trials and tribulations. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Jacob had his, and, you know, his just happened to be on national television. I'll just say that. I like Jacob. He was always good to me. He was always a good teammate to me. He had his issues, but I saw him outside the facility. He was also a quarterback. You know, it could be a little biased there. You know, I'm a wide receiver. I'm always going to give, you know, especially the guys that give me the ball, the benefit of the doubt. But like I said, I met his family. I know his parents. I know his brothers. You know, when you know somebody more than kind of maybe other players, because let's not be like, you know, like naive here. Like, not everybody on the team is going to like each other. You know, that's
sure.
I mean, there's
conflicting personalities.
There's 100 plus players. You know, you're not going to like everybody, but you're going to like them on game day more than, you know, Texas. You know what I'm saying? And that's all that really matters. You know, as long as everybody respects each other and, you know, you guys are great teammates, who cares? You know, if you don't like me, then that's fine. But, you know, at the end of the day on Saturdays, you know, I know that JD was going to go to war for Jacob, and that's all that matters. So his comment doesn't, you know, it's not a bad comment.
I will say this. And it's not so much personality wise. It's
I mean,
he would go park in the coach's parking lot.
Yeah,
he would jump to the front of the line at dinner. He thought that because he was a starting quarterback, and I saw it multiple times. That stuff pisses me off. It's the me before we stuff that tears down cultures. That's what I'm harping on.
Yeah. And I, like I said, I have no problem with JD's approach. But to get into the season.
Yeah, so we'll get back to this team.
Sorry.
Yeah, you know, I don't know if Jacob sees this. You know, Jacob, you know, he knows me. So he'll be like, what in the world? You? And I'm like, look, you know what I'm saying? That's not my. Yeah. So I just wanted to address that first because, you know,
Tell him to call me.
You know what I'm saying? Like I said, you know, everybody's not going to like each other. But to get into the season, look, we're a top 10 team preseason, you know? Like, I know the Iowa State fan in me, the former player in me knows that, you know, looking at the schedule, I knew instantly what were going to be the tough games. It was going to be Northern Iowa, just because they always give us a tough game, Iowa. It was going to be Baylor, because I always feel like, and like JD's harped on this a couple of times, we always kind of play it like Baylor kind of like always kind of gives us trouble, always kind of figures us out, whether they're the top ranked team, they could be a one win, two win team. Cause like JD said, you know, when we were playing, Baylor had two wins and they gave us a game. You know what I'm saying? So they always kind of
one win.
Yeah. One win. So they always kind of figure us out and give us, you know, their ultimate best. So I knew Baylor was going to be a tough game, and especially it's the first Big 12 game. I knew it was going to be tough. Oklahoma State always is a tough game, which it was. And then I thought really the last two, in my opinion, before the season, the last two games would be Texas, just because of their athletes, because at the end of the day, they do have good athletes. Not saying that I wasn't confident that we were going to win, and it was in Ames and, you know, late in the season when the cold was starting to pick up. And then also Oklahoma, just because, you know, they've been dominant in the Big 12. I mean, who wouldn't think that Oklahoma would be dominant again at the beginning of the season? Now, I think the first game of the season kind of set the tone on the season. You know, we were going in thinking, look, we've got so many guys returning. This has never happened. We finally got a consistent quarterback as far as in Iowa State history. He's all, you know, he's returning. There's not kind of like a, you know, an injury or he gets outplayed by somebody else. Like, we were kind of expecting Brock to kind of make that almost kind of a NFL leap. Like, you know, he's going to assert himself as, you know, one of the top three quarterbacks in the country. And not to blame, it's not all on Brock. I just think going into that game and after that game ended, I had a big like feeling in my gut, like that's not how you come out the first game of the season. And it carried over. We barely won. We won the football game. Defense played great, but it's Northern Iowa. Then we come out the next week, we lose to Iowa. And then, you know, we kind of have a cupcake with, you know, UNLV. And then we get basically, you know, we get into, all right, it's Baylor. It's conference time. And we kind of weren't really ready at the beginning of the game. I remember we scored on the first drive, but then after that, it was kind of, you know, it was sloppy. You know, the scheme didn't really look how we thought it was, how we thought it should be, especially coming off. I think we had a bye right before Baylor, too. I'm not mistaken. It could be wrong. But, you know, kind of after the Baylor game, I just didn't feel right about the season. Now, we ended up, you know, bouncing back a couple games, beating Oklahoma State, thought that was a really big game. And I thought that was potentially the game where it could kind of wake us up. But then I think the season was the West Virginia game. When I saw that, I'm having a brain freeze right now, but Mike Rose was out for that game, and the way our defense looked and how we just didn't look good. And it alarmed me because if one player leaves, even though he's a star player, we had multiple quote unquote veterans and star players that came back this year. So it felt like that those guys will pick up the slack and be ready to go and have everybody ready. It wasn't like, you know, guys hadn't played. We still had Jay Cummins. We still had Orion Vance alongside Mike Rose when he played. So whoever filled in, we still had enough guys to win the game. We just didn't look good on defense, you know, and we end up losing the game. And we should have lost the game. We didn't play well. And then we go the next week and we play Texas Tech. And, you know, another game where I felt like we have to have it. Like that's a game we have to have, and then we lose that game. And so that was basically the season right there, you know. And then it was kind of Iowa State had all these expectations. And like JD said countless times, when Iowa State has expectations, we don't play the same. We don't coach the same. It's just not good. And for whatever reason, and, you know, we felt like we were going into the season, be a championship team. But the problem is, if you are a championship team, expectation is going to come sometime in the season. If you're 6-0, people are thinking, hey, we can win this whole conference. Like, it's natural, you know, and the players should think that. And I just felt like, you know, I honestly don't think if you had to give me a percentage of the season, I don't put it mostly on the players. I think most of it was coaching for whatever reason. I don't know who's to blame. I don't know. But for whatever reason, you know, I just feel like I don't think we just put our guys in the right position to win games. And, you know, guys, people harped on me beginning of the year saying, look, I feel like our wide receivers and our DBs are going to be probably the reason that we win a Big 12 title. If our wide receivers play well alongside with Breece Hall, and then obviously if our wide receivers are playing well, then, you know, it's obvious that Brock Purdy's playing well, you know, and we'll have a good season because we're not predictable. Our problem has been predictability for the last 2 or 3 years. And for whatever reason, we can't get out of it. I don't know what it is, the lack of trust. Maybe we don't have the depth. For whatever reason, we just haven't gotten it. We haven't gotten it done. And especially when we have some type of expectation. Look, if Iowa State's down, they're going to make a comeback because we got the best playbook in the country when we're down. But when it's a ball game or when, you know, it's a tight game, we don't have it. I mean, the proof is in the pudding. Watch the film, you know, watch every game, you know, and then come back to us, you know? And so I just feel like we didn't put ourselves in position to be a championship team. You know, with all that we saw this year, if you look, like I said, when you look at the schedule, you look at the teams, you look at how the scores of the game, you know, you're scratching your head like how do we lose 6 games? You know, how do we let these games slip away, slip out of our fingers? You know, and honestly, if I had to basically put 2 words into the season, it would be what if? What if, you know, that's basically our season. What if, you know, what if we, you know, would have, you know, dialed up a couple more plays, got a little bit more creative. Look, we had the guys. Some of the guys weren't even playing, you know? And not, like I said, not to harp on the coaching staff, because, you know, I know the coaching staff, and they're good guys and they're good coaches. But at the same time, you got to and I know what Coach Campbell's doing. Got to reevaluate. Got to look over. What are we doing different? And we've got to get it fixed, because it's not getting easier and teams are getting better. You know, Texas Tech got a decent quarterback now, you know. They're getting better, you know. Baylor won the conference. Who would have thought Baylor was going to win this conference before the beginning of the year? I don't know too many people picking it besides maybe people in Waco, and they probably didn't even believe it, you know.
I mean, thought they'd be a player, but I didn't think they'd win.
Yeah, you know, nobody thought they would even be in the championship game. You know, a lot of people thought Oklahoma State could get in the championship game and could possibly win the conference. But nobody thought Baylor would get in. They won the conference. They're going to continue to get better. Oklahoma State, they're going to continue getting better. They just beat a good Notre Dame team in the Fiesta Bowl. You know, teams are getting better, man, and we've got to adapt. We've got to get better skill-wise. We've got to get better even in the trenches. I feel like we still got to get better in the trenches. I feel like teams are kind of starting to figure us out, too. It's not a bad thing to change. I'm not saying change everything, but I'm just saying we might need a little change, maybe a little wrinkle, you know, maybe blitz more, maybe, you know, have four down linemen just a tad bit more. I'm not saying to change the system, because it worked, you know, we had dominant defensive performances like the Texas game, but we've got to sit down and we've got to figure out what is the deal here. What are we not doing right? Because again, these teams are getting better. Teams are adapting to us. Teams are adapting, and Baylor is just won a Big 12 title. They won how many games last year? Three, four?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Come on, it can be done. You know, it can be done. So why can't it be us? Why can't we live up to expectation? Or why can't we over exceed expectations? Whatever it is going into next season, we've got to figure it out. I'm confident in our coaching staff that they can do it, but it starts immediately after that Clemson game. You know, it started, it's going now. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of my deal on the season. I just think a lot of what if, man. Like, look at the schedule. Literally they said in the Clemson game, there was like five games where it was decided by one score. So don't tell me that we're not good enough. You know, I think we're good enough. I just feel like we've got to get better. Whatever it is, we've got to find a way to get better.
And this that kind of transitions into what I was talking about earlier, and a point that I wanted to bring up is that one of the things that Campbell has talked about since day one is winning in the margins. And mm-hmm. stuff like that. And this season, Iowa State lost a lot in the margins pretty consistently.
Yeah.
So that was a point that annoyed me a little bit, because he always was talking about saying we gotta win the margins, do the little things, all this. Well, they didn't do I did not play college football like you guys did, but so my opinion is probably largely untrained, if you want to call it that. But what I saw was a lot of not winning in the margins, it's losing mm-hmm. turnover battles, making stupid penalties, guys, you know, not being in the right place at the right time, the offensive line not getting it together, stuff mm-hmm. like that. You know,
like, a lot of stuff like that.
A lot of silly shit that was them not winning in the margins. It was or special teams, early in the season. I mean, special teams is the margins. Like, the margins is special teams, turnovers, and penalties. If you're good in those three spots, you can win a lot of games.
And just to intervene for a quick second,
go ahead.
The difference between last year and this year, we won in the margins. We did everything right.
Agreed.
Limited turnovers. You know, when we needed it most, we created turnovers. We got big stops. If it was third and long, we're getting off the field. It's just little stuff like that that adds up. It piles up. You know, it's not like big issues. Like I said, we were in every game, you know, but it's little stuff that eventually it piles up And once it piles up too high, it tips over. And that's exactly what our season did. It started from Northern Iowa, and it went all the way to Clemson. And eventually, it tipped over.
Yeah. Well, go ahead, JD.
I think this, you know, all right. This is a tumultuous talking point because it's heavily emotional, and that's Brock Purdy's. I think of it in two different ways. I think of Brock Purdy, the man. I think Brock Purdy, the quarterback. Brock Purdy, the man, A+. No, amazing leader, probably one of the best in the history of Iowa State. He commanded the offense, and everyone looked up to him for answers. All right. And at times, he was incredible. But I think this, I think in games where we needed him to play his absolute best, aside from Oklahoma State, which he did what he needed to do. And it could have been play calling. It could have been something else. But this is a guy that's broken how many records? 30?
31. 30, I think he owns 31 records.
Which I mean, that's incredible itself.
Yeah.
I don't know how weighted that is, considering that, especially during our time, we didn't go through a single season with the same quarterback. The quarterback we started with the start of the season, he never finished.
Brock Purdy was the first quarterback since Brett Meyer to finish Brett Meyer. to start and finish every game in the season.
Yeah, which is not normal, and I'm not saying that his record, that his stats don't speak for themselves. I just think performance wise, I think he kind of plateaued after his second season. After the 2019 season, I think that was his peak season. You know, he had 27 touchdown passes, same amount. He had the same amount of picks for all four seasons he played.
Well, I would almost argue that 2018 was his best season, his freshman season.
His freshman year, most explosive.
That's kind of where I was going with it. It might not have been as efficient as 2019 or 2020, or even 2021, where he was very efficient. But 2018, Brock Purdy was the Brock Purdy that he felt special, like a dude that he would just go out, he'd make plays outside the pocket. He was a really good, he's a crafty runner, making great, you know, making really electric throws all over the place, like. Like, he was electric in 2018.
I mean, we were thinking, oh my God, in 2 years? What is he going to look like?
What's he going to look like? Yeah, he's going to be Johnny Manziel in 2 years.
Johnny Manziel. And so we had that expectation, and it was just kind of like, this is Brock Purdy all 2018. And then it just kind of like
He plateaued.
But so here's my thing. Is that just on him?
I think that's a very fair question. Was he limited? Like, was there something that stunted his growth from the coaching staff?
You can even look at Johnny Manziel. We could use Johnny as an example. That first year he got on the scene was magical. Won the Heisman. He looked unstoppable. But then that next year, did he look the same? He made a little bit more turnovers. You know, pressure kind of got to him. Expectations rise. You know, defensive coordinators game plan.
Johnny.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe it was just we didn't adjust offensively. Obviously, you know, we could speculate. It could be the coaches. It could be him. I just think that these defensive coordinators, you know, they got. You know, beat by a true freshman. He just came in. They didn't really have a lot of film on him.
Right.
You know, they didn't really know this guy. So the first year he's kind of doing whatever, kind of doing his own thing. And then the next year, you know, they get a little bit better grasp on him. Okay. You know, these are the type of throws he's kind of continuing to miss. Let's do these type of let's disguise a little more instead of just kind of just blitzing at him and, you know, not even knowing if he could scramble, get out the pocket like he was and making plays. And then also he had a crazy security blanket with Hakeem Buckley.
That's where I was kind of going with this. So 2018, he was just playing fast and loose. He was Brock Purdy. He was the quintessential Brock Purdy. And he had the benefit of an offense, and he had the benefit of a Hakeem Butler. Matt Eaton was a nice target for him too. Mm-hmm. Trevor Ryan was good with him.
Yep.
Or No, Trevor Ryan was gone, but he had DeShante, Matt Eaton, Hakeem Butler. He had some nice targets there. And Charlie Kohler was just a sophomore, so he wasn't really fully there yet. So I think the overall focus of the offense did not do him any favors, because you went from, like, Brock was really good when he had a pretty wide open offense, you know, and Dave Montgomery, obviously. He had a pretty wide open offense, thinking that they were comfortable throwing the ball downfield. He had Hakeem Butler, who could make big catches down the field. And you had all those, and then we saw a kind of a slow regression almost back into now this offense, which was power run, force feed it to the tight ends, hit Xavier underneath. Like, the passes just got closer and closer to the line of scrimmage, and it was more of a power run game. Whereas, like, you had back in 2018 more of a vertical passing game, and you had a night, and David was not in a power run offense like Breece was. David was in a lot. He was running a lot more zone read and stuff like that. It wasn't in a power offense like Breece was. And a power run West Coast type of thing that Iowa State was trying to do doesn't really fit Brock's skill set that well. I mean, that's like a guy where you take not going to be super mobile, mobile-ish, but not super mobile, hyper accurate guy, whatever. Brock's a dude. He's a gamer, man. He's a Brett Favre type where he's just going to go around. He's just going to make plays. That's what he's just going to do. Sometimes it's going to work. Sometimes it's not going to work. But sometimes it is going to work. And sometimes it's going to be awesome. He's a Brett Favre kind of guy. And with those kind of guys, you want to give them options to throw the ball downfield. You want to let them loose a little bit. And I think the offense became a bit restrictive for him as his career developed. Mm-hmm. And I think that was, to me, that was one of the biggest factors as to why we didn't see Brock blossom into this beautiful scrambling genius, Johnny Manziel type or whatever by his junior season.
Think of all the times that we're watching the games and we're like, we're throwing all these slants and dig routes and just like 5-10 yard routes. And then we throw the ball 15 plus yards on the field and it goes for a mile. And then we run the ball again and do the same stuff. And Mark just said 1,000 times, every time we throw the ball down the field, we get plays. I mean, when you pass the ball 10 yards and under, those safeties are going to play close. So lull them to sleep.
Yeah. Yep.
We kept lulling them to sleep. We never exposed them.
Yeah. You never woke them up.
And I think the most frustrating thing, sorry, JD, just quick point. I think the most frustrating thing was, like, I loved our tight ends. I loved him. I loved Charlie. I felt like Charlie was a guy that he can't be off the field. But when you've got guys like I think his name is Jared Russ, Chase Allen, they're great players at what they do, but they're limited in basically. Chase Allen's not going. He's going to be a great red zone threat, great possession receiver. But he's not going to expose the defense down the field. These top offenses that we see, Alabama, who was the top offense this year? They have a threat, and there's a fear of exposing and getting beat down the field. Exactly. Ohio State.
It was Ohio there's State and the West Kentucky Hilltoppers.
Yes. There's a threat of there's a fear there's almost like a sense of I can't sleep because they're going to attack my DBs down the field. We don't, like, Breece Hall was clearly, I mean, this year, if he's not the number one back taken, he's at least number two, but people feared Breece. But when it came to the passing game, you can watch on the film, they didn't fear the passing game as much as they feared Breece Hall. And I think that 100%. Was the issue. And that was because, when you use so many tight ends, there's only certain, unless we had, Travis Kelce, people are not getting burned down the field. There's two great of athletes. They're not getting burned down the field at a consistent rate with tight ends like that. We've got to use our weapons. I mean, we've had Sean Shaw. We've had Joe Skates. You know, we even had Tariq. I mean, these guys.
Darren Wilson is supposed to be good wheels. Shown
examples of beating people deep. I mean, the Kansas game, Joe Skates blows by the, you know, the corner and the safety.
Smoking.
Now, I know it's Kansas, but that's just a little.
I mean, look at. No, that's. You have Xavier. You didn't even use Xavier. I mean, you threw Xavier the ball 15 times a game, but none of them went downfield. I mean, look at the Clemson game. Clemson
went down the field for a jump ball.
The Clemson game, Xavier had a broken thumb, and still, they showed his one on one with the corner. He toasted him off the line, like just a picture perfect release, just smoked him or whatever. And it was a good throw by Brock. Great catch by Xavier. Why are we not doing anymore? Like, Clemson's corners are no joke. I mean, it's not like he just smoked some scrub from wherever. I mean, he just toasted a corner from Clemson or whatever, like, and left him 5 yards in the dust and made an awesome catch. Like, why are we not throwing it deep to Xavier?
Yeah, I mean, and then you kind of see, like, week to week, like, obviously we watch Big 12 games. Like, going into the Texas Tech game, like, do we not forget that, like, Texas Tech put 70 on Texas Tech secondary? And then we go into the game and
we're just trying to power run the shit out of it.
Yeah, I'm like, they're not good. It's on film. Like, why are we?
There was an inflexibility and a rigidity to the offensive game plan that was a bit annoying.
Mm-hmm. It seemed like we just respected everyone's defenses way too much. Like,
sometimes
we didn't say this. Like, okay,
agreed.
We can't do this and this because they do this and this. We can't throw these deep routes because they're going to double on Xavier. Okay, how about we try it?
Let's find out.
Works.
Let's find
out. Allen got doubled all the time.
Yeah, we just threw it to him.
And then when Allen got doubled, March or Trevor would come underneath. You guys were awesome at that. You got to keep – I tell you what, we had an underrated receiving core, and I love talking about this because it still cracks me up. And I don't know if you've seen Trevor lately, March, but his neck is enormous. He looks like a
– Yeah, I saw.
But you got Allen and Hakeem on the outside. Send them deep, and then you got two speedy, shorter wide receivers, slot guys.
But not to mention we had DeShante on the bench.
Is it Trevor, Marchi, DeShante? Yeah, I mean
– We had DeShante, and we had David who wasn't going to get tackled. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, and we had – I know we don't – I mean, I guess – We don't have 6'5 guys. I don't know how tall Xavier is. 6'3.
6'2.
He doesn't have.
He's like 6'2.
You know what I mean? But I think Hakeem looks like Dwight Howard, but 6 inches shorter, you know? And then Allen is Allen, who, I mean, I tell you what, I can't talk enough about Allen. I love watching him play, man. He's even better.
He's even better now.
he doesn't drop the wide open passes anymore. And he did that occasionally, which is why people probably didn't draft him. But he'd catch all the hard balls, all the ones that never get caught. But then he'd like drop these easy curls. Yeah, or something.
And Hakeem was kind of like that too, but he was more to the extreme where he would make even crazier catches than Allen, but he would also drop sillier ones than Allen would.
But I think Allen was the better football player, but Hakeem was the better athlete.
I could probably get on board with that. But I think one thing that was looking back at that 2017 team, though, is that receiving group was loaded. There was a ton. Oh, yeah. There was so many good receivers. And we weren't afraid to throw it to them. Even when Jacob Park was in or whatever, I remember that chuck deep to Marchi in the Ohio game. Just threw it deep. It was like we didn't sit back and try to power run against Ohio. You know, we sat back and he sent March in a big ass post route and Jake hit him deep. Like, yeah. That's all there was.
He had all the pools. No. Like, and again, I only brought that up.
But that wasn't a throw that Brock Purdy can't make. I mean, that wasn't like a Jacob Park exclusive throw or anything like that. I mean, that was
Jacob could throw a pretty ball.
His arm talent was phenomenal. But still, even though that was a very good throw by Jake, that wasn't one that Brock Purdy can't make. I mean, he could make that throw. And, I mean, no disrespect to March, but Xavier can also run that route or whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean,
I wouldn't say that's disrespect. I say that's what's expected.
Right. Well, that's yeah. Like, I didn't, like, I was trying to make it sure it makes make it didn't seem like I was like, oh, Marchie ain't got shit on Xavier. Like I didn't want to make it sound like that on accident.
Well, I mean, it's
but that like, that it's, but that play is something you could do with Xavier and Brock just as easily as you could do it with Marchie and Jacob Park or whatever. Like, why they didn't do that, I have no idea. But they just didn't. They didn't test secondaries. They didn't at all. Even though you got the horses to do it. With Jalen Knoll is a great player. I mean, he's a great player. I mean, they should feed him more, but they didn't really run him downfield at all. They just threw bubble screens and slants to him.
Like, he literally in the Clemson, like in literally in this last game, he catches a RPO and he's making plays. He's making people miss.
Yeah.
He turned a normal, probably 10 to 12 yard play into a 30 yard play. 30,
yeah.
35.
Something like that. Like, yeah.
You know, like, where was this? You know, like Xavier has a broken thumb. Cool. But Sean Shaw was on the bench.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we had Joe Skates all season. He's proven that he can literally run down the field. Like, here's my thing. I think we overthink this.
Oh,
at receiver, if you run a great comeback, I'm going to use you on plays that we run the comeback. Like, don't be so naive into saying he has weaknesses here. Focus on his strengths.
Right.
Focus on, okay, if Joe Skates can run down and run by people down the field, I don't care if they know every time he's on the field, he's running a go route. Throw the ball, because a lot of times, hey, just let your guys be guys. And I think that's what we don't do. Oklahoma, like, some of those guys don't even run great routes. They just run down the field. Hey, I know that he can run this route and this route great, and he's going to be in the game on that. And they go out and execute it. Oklahoma State, we're not a good passing team. Spencer Sanders is not a good thrower. Literally, Oklahoma State said, you know what? But we got number one out wide, so we're going to create plays for number one. I think his name is like Zay Martin. Can't remember. We're literally going to – I don't care if we got to motion him in and we motion him back out, we shift him. We're going to find a ways to get our best players the football. I think we did that for Brees. Don't think we did a good job of that doing it. I think we did a good job of it for Charlie even. But – for those big explosive plays, it's so hard to basically drive down the field 10 to 12, eight to 12 play drives every time to score. Like, you need big plays. Like, that's how like top offenses score. Sometimes it only takes three or four plays because you get big plays. It was just frustrating to watch sometimes.
I brought it up on the nightcap the other night, but When you watched this offense, it felt like every single play was micromanaged down to the very, very inch. Like, it felt rigid and tight. Like, none of the plays we ran felt like there was any room whatsoever allowed for something to go wrong or something for, like, if the first or second read wasn't open, something like everything just got clogged up. Like, there was, like, I'm trying to, the best way to do it. It's hard to kind of explain without really watching it, but it felt like everything was super rigid and tight, but not in a good way, though. Not like military precision executing this bang, 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 bang. It felt like everything was so tight. Like, everyone was under so much tension and stress all the time.
I think the difference is this, you got, last year you had Dylan Sainer, Chase Allen, and Charlie Kolar. Sainer could run in space.
Yeah.
Not super clean, but he could run 20 yards down the field and make those plays.
Yeah.
Jared Russ couldn't do that. Now, Jared Russ reminded me of like a Sam Seenbuckner. They would send Seenbuckner on like a flat route or just like a 5 yard dig or something like that, an out route, things like that. But we're sending Jared Russ into the corner 15 yards down the field on like a corner route. And this one formation we had, I know we've talked about it. Every time you knew it's going to be a power,
oh my God,
or sweep to, or a zone or something to Brees. And it's when we got the F back stacked, you either got Breece stacked behind Jared Ross. Jared Ross is in between the guard or the the guard and
between
the tackle.
Between a guard and a tackle in the H back spot
zone or something every single time.
Every time
run one play action. We did it one. In fact, I forgot what game it was, but I saw us do it one time because I go, oh damn it, it's another run and like second 16 or something. We ran a play action and we get 15 yards out of it, and then we never did it again. And so it's I think we're afraid to be predictable, but we're still predictable. Like it's like I can't think of how many defensive games were like the Iowa Hawkeyes. Granted, their offense gets a ton of – I mean, their offense is – it is what it is. They're plagued by bad quarterback play, but they've been running power zone and counter for 20 years, and it somehow it still continues to work time and time again.
I always joke that the first play – if you were watching Iowa game, the first Iowa offensive play of every single game is stretch left. Every single one.
a stretch. But it's just – so I think our play call, we just need to be able to let loose, like take the shackles off of whoever of.
Well, you see, like before they run every single play, they run a motion. They always motion at least one guy, if not a couple guys around. They're moving guys around, wherever, trying to move the defense around and see what they're doing, which is fine if you're trying to do kind of this sleight of hand, like, ooh, where's everybody at type of thing. But the problem is if the motion is the same spot every time and they end in the same spot every single time, that's kind of fishy. And you're like, because like if you see Breece is lined up way out wide, you're like, okay, he's gonna motion in the backfield and they're gonna hand it off to him, and sure as shit he'll motion in the backfield, and then they'll hand it off to him, and he does, and like if you watch this, it doesn't take a lot of film to watch this and be like, okay, that you can look at him, you can look at who's in motion and where they're coming from and where they're going to, and you can tell what's gonna happen.
Well, it's just. I mean, I think we got so giddy in 2020 because of the three tight end formation that we're trying to normalize it. And it's a very rare offense.
It's a niche thing. You can't just do it all the time.
Yes, but to get the personnel to do that. I mean, you look at our two out of our top four receivers this year were Chase Allen and Charlie Kolar. All right, which that's – in fact, their average per catch is pretty high comparable. But – we have Charlie Kolar, Breece Hall, and Chase Allen are three of our top four wide receivers. Xavier's number one. I just think
all can't believe that we don't have a wide like we don't have another wide receiver in the top four. It's receiver, tight end, running back. Why is there not a second receiver in there somewhere?
Well, you got Tariq at number five. He had 15 catches, and then Jalen Noah 38, but he averaged 7 yards a catch. 7 yards a catch on.
Oh, you're looking at yards per catch. Okay, okay. I thought you were talking about receptions. And I was like, what the hell?
Well, I just happened to notice. Hey,
Tariq had 15 catches,
but he averaged 18 yards per catch. But I'm looking at our averages to back up our point. You know, most times, good teams and good wide receivers will have anywhere over 15 yards a catch, and I'm just saying that, but. We got two guys, if you don't count, well, yeah. We got two guys consistently that had over 15 yards to catch. Everyone else is in that first down range, you know, we're 8, 10, 11. And we have to stretch the field. I mean, Breece, I'd like to, we want to run the ball, absolutely. You want to give your Heisman hopeful running back a chance to run the ball and get in space because – I mean, I think David is better at making something out of nothing than Breece, only by a slight margin.
But then Breece is probably better at turning a little bit of something into a lot.
Yes, because Breece could turn the wheels. David's not as fast as Breece, and he's more of just a power. Like I'm going to get 20 yards and I'm going to break 7 tackles doing it. Versus Breece is like I'm going to run 10 yards down the field and no one's going to touch me until I'm 15 yards in. So it's kind of just I don't know how else we can spin it other than we were conservative on offense. We didn't give our playmakers a chance. We respected the defense too much. But on the defensive side of the ball, I feel like we were pretty consistent outside of if Mike Rose or Will McDonald didn't play, our defense fell apart.
Which is alarming.
It's not good. It is alarming because
Will's coming back. Mike's gone. All right. Good thing is Orion Vance is coming back because Orion's
pretty Orion Vance did announce today that he's coming back. So that's good.
Orion's coming back.
Campbell didn't mention after the or before or after the Cheese Bowl, he thought that Orion Vance was coming back.
Yeah.
But it's good to see that it's confirmed. The nice thing about that, too, is that this is not nearly as much of a rebuild as we thought it was going to be because we thought we were losing fucking everybody. Well, Will McDonald's coming back. Orion Vance is coming back. Turns out we lost Ashim Young, but Bo Freeler apparently is an absolute friggin' machine or whatever. So may not even notice Ashim being gone.
I think there's two things that help Iowa State in the future, right? And one of them is
Anthony Johnson coming back is huge.
Anthony Johnson come back. No, I'm talking about not the future, but from the season. One of the greatest surprises I ever. I'm not going to say I didn't think it would happen, but it surprised me. And then it continued to because the elevation of his game going up was any Wazirike was a force across the board every single game. He wasn't a flashy player, but he was almost, you know what? I'm going to say he was better than Ray Lima at his role. And I think that's
pretty conclusive. I mean, Ray was good at his job, but Annie was outstanding at his job. And
he had the length. Annie has the length. And also,
he could bounce outside too. You didn't have to play him at tackle or defensive end. Yes. You could play him at either one.
But he's 6'8 or 6'6, 6'8, whatever. Huge frame.
Massive. 320. Dude.
And can move. And another thing, because as we talk about a rebuild, you know, at the beginning of the season, we're talking about the Big 12 conference is pretty much done. I mean, I thought the conference was completely over. I thought, all right, we need to make a push for the Big 10, and we need to get out of this shit show of a situation. But in fact, both the top two teams in the conference were non-SEC bound teams. You know, and three out of the top four, if you count us in the top four, I feel like there's a bit of a drop off in record, at least between us and OU. But, you know, just the Big 12 is looking really good for the future. Cincinnati, a playoff team. BYU finished, they finished ranked. I don't know. They win. No, they lost their, they won their bowl game, right? Because they played in Alabama, I believe, against South Florida.
Who are you talking about again?
BYU.
BYU lost to UAB.
UAB. I knew that.
UAB is a good team, though. That's no slouch.
UCF looked great against Florida.
Yes, that sounds right.
Houston, they lost.
And Cincinnati was in the playoff. So,
yes.
You know, I mean, actually, I was looking at the S&P Plus rankings from Bill Connolly from ESPN, and actually the new Big 12 graded out better than the current Big 12.
Yes.
So, like, If you took Oklahoma and Texas out and put the new Big 12 in, the new Big 12 is better.
Mm-hmm. Well, I say this though, dude.
I was telling you, like the new Big 12, like the only consistently bad team is Kansas, and Kansas with Lance Leopold might not be bad for much longer. Like they're not going to be an easy out anymore. Like give them maybe not next year, but the year after that, I would bet Kansas is no longer an easy out. After next season,
ask Texas.
But then who else is left in the conference? You got Kansas. If they're not an easy out, Kansas State isn't an easy out. Texas Tech is not an easy out because they got a quarterback again. You know, Oklahoma State. Baylor's good. BYU is good. Cincinnati's good. UCF is good. Houston, I guess, might be the second worst team in the conference, but Houston can be really good. You know, then you got us. West Virginia's got. You know, West Virginia always has a pretty good shot to be good. I mean. The new Big 12 is outstanding. It may not have a blue blood in it, but it is a really good it's a really deep football conference and basketball conference. It's already the best basketball conference in America by a good margin, and it's going to get better somehow.
Texas Tech with Joey McGuire, I mean, he's killing it in the recruiting field.
Texas Tech has a chance to keep going up. Not only did they look good against at the end of the season with the new quarterback, but Joey McGuire.
They took two transfers from Texas.
Texas Tech has a chance to be really good going forward. I mean,
for sure. And that's why I say we have to get our shit together.
We have to get our shit together. Otherwise, we're going to get left behind.
I think all four of those new teams would kick our ass. Right,
I'm telling you, TCU never stays down.
I forgot about TCU. TCU, yeah.
Never.
I mean, right now they're like the second worst team in the conference, but they're not bad. I mean, it's still TCU. I mean, they're going to be good. And TCU's I think Sonny Dykes is a good coach. I think he'll do a good job there.
TCU has been up and down for a few years. I think that's why Gary was just tired of it. Or
well, and I think that you could argue that was because Gary was kind of just getting over it type of thing or whatever. We'll see. Sonny Dykes is a good coach. I think they'll be fine. TCU lives in there's too much talent in Dallas-Fort Worth for TCU to not be good.
At the same time, though, something that, you know, I mean, as we talk about this flash and the NIL, everything, TCU has never had, like, they don't sell out any of their games. I've never
the TCU fans I do know are really awesome people. They're super cool to hang out with. They're great. There's just like a dozen of them. There's not very many.
I remember we were going to, I mean, just they've, they had a consistently awesome program for at least 4 to 5 years, and they could never fill out their stadium. And we were just thinking, dude, if this were Ames and we were 10-2 or 9-1, I mean, we were 3-9.
You couldn't buy a ticket if you wanted to. Like
Exactly. So it's just, I think, I mean, again, we have enormous potential moving forward, and the fact that Coach Campbell is more loyal to the Cyclones. I mean, really, he hated the old Big 12 and how it was just all offense, no defense and stuff. I tell you what, defense lives in the Big 12 now. I mean, but you can make that a point with any conference. Especially with the SEC, there's high scoring games everywhere. But I tell you what, I'm looking at our schedule from this year, and I don't think there's any team that's going to be worse next year. Except maybe Kansas.
West Virginia will probably take a step back.
West Virginia, maybe. And then
Losing Jared Daigie and all this. Like, I mean, yeah.
True. I mean,
the last Stills brother, I believe, is gone too.
Yeah. I'm excited for Texas. I mean, I'm excited for Deckers to come in because he showed flashes. He got some great experience.
Hunter Deckers, man. I'm super excited for him.
I'm ready for Deckers.
I'm ready for
him. I'm ready to see how that goes.
No disrespect to Brock Purdy, but I'm ready for Hunter Deckers.
And I'm not shitting on Brock Purdy's
career.
I'm not. I'm just saying. I'm merely.
I'm looking forward to something different. That's
I'm questioning what happened with over the last 3 years. Was it play calling? Was it talent? Was it just comfortability?
I brought it up too. We don't have to dig too much further into that too. But there's probably an argument to be made where having so many good tight ends and feeling an obligation to keep feeding them so much.
Yes.
Probably held the offense back.
Mm-hmm. But this is an exciting time to be in the Big 12, though, but we got to keep, because I guarantee you.
The recruiting class they just pulled in is a good sign, a really good sign.
Yes.
And I think, but the guys that are in this recruiting class, this 30-ish ranked recruiting class, they need to have the same growth curve that Mike Rose and Brock Purdy and Will McDonald and Greg Eisworth, they need to have that same growth, and Charlie Kohler, they need to have that same growth curve where they start out here and they end up here. They need to have that same one if you're going to take a step up. It can't be they come in as a high 3-star in the end as a low 4-star talent type of thing where they have just a little bit of growth. They're a good player, but they have just a little bit. They just got a little bit better for their career. They need to get the same amount better that Mike Rhodes and Charlie Kohler and all them did. And turn into these really, really high end, you know, a couple of these guys need to be second round pick, first round pick kind of guys.
True. It's just something else. And, you know, I think this is more important now than it ever has been. And this is something that Coach Haycock told us immediately after the Oklahoma game when we down beat him, is don't drink the poison. Mm-hmm. No one's going to tell you how awesome you are. You're going to walk in. And I've been in the new locker room, dude. It is. It looks like the Cowboys won down in Frisco. You know, that's they got their faces with the jersey on their lockers. They got screens everywhere. They got all this nice stuff. They got an arcade room. They have things that we never have, but also we never really needed. We didn't really care about that stuff. We just wanted to win a bowl game. And so I think it's extremely important that these kids grasp the moment immediately and realize what we're up against. And that is a rising stock conference that, you know, I tell you what, I don't think Luke Fickell's going to leave Cincinnati anytime soon. He's happy there. And he's excited that he's going to bring Cincinnati to a Power 5 conference. BYU's always good. Of course, they're all 30 and 35 with nine kids. And then UCF, you know, they're going to grab that Florida market. And Houston with Dana Holgorsen. He's played, he's coached in the Big 12 for years. He knows what's going to happen. He knows the expectations. So you got a lot of incoming talent coming out of TBD on what the day it's going to be. Max within 3 years. 2024 is when they're supposed to come in. That's the very end.
Is that it? Well, it's 2025 by contract. If everybody pays up and what they need to, this could be the last season with Oklahoma and Texas.
Which, honestly, I'd be tickled for because I can't wait for them to leave, man.
I don't have any desire at all to share a conference with them anymore.
No, well, we could finally get a Big 12 network back because Texas bought out the rights. We haven't had a network for years. It's just been Fox Sports One. That's been the Big 12 network, quote unquote, since Texas has the Longhorn network. And right. So that kind of surprised me that they want to go to the SEC. I'm like, well, you can't have the Longhorn network because they have their own.
And so much money. It doesn't even matter.
It is so much money.
Recruits, because they eventually want to win. They want to get back to winning. So, and they feel that getting into the SEC somehow is going to get them, keep the Texas recruits home that end up going to Alabama, Georgia, Florida, LSU, all those.
You know what would have kept those recruits in Texas? Losing to fucking Kansas.
Yeah.
That's not, you know, Texas not becoming an embarrassment. That would have kept that probably would have kept the players in Texas. I mean, let's just be real here.
I mean, let's be honest.
They screwed that pooch themselves.
Yeah,
that was their own fault.
I've played against Texas and OU. Like, if you put Texas and OU in a line, Texas looks like on paper. If you're looking, Texas looked better, but it doesn't really matter because, unfortunately, the game has to be played, and you have to be developed, and you actually have to know what you're doing.
That quote. Oh my god, Texas is going to put that in a banner, and they're going to put it up. They're going to put it on the field.
They don't give a shit about us. Why would they care what we say?
They should paint it on the field right in front of their big new uterus. Longhorn logo that they put in their new stand. Paint it on the field right there. Unfortunately, the game has to be played.
Yeah. I mean, and unfortunately, we've won the last three times we've played. They scored 7 points.
There's a real chance that Texas leaves the Big 12 losing 4 straight to Iowa State and losing 2 straight to Kansas.
And, I mean, they have to play Alabama, I think, the first game of the year next year.
They're going
to
get smoked. Like,
prayers up.
It's going to be
– Bryce Young is coming back. I mean, it's – in Austin too, by
the way. They're just gonna get shit stomped. It's gonna be ugly.
But just to kind of finish everything off, man, I wanna give a shout out to Brock Purdy, to Brees Hall, to this class and to these guys that are leaving. Because even though as a former player, if we got into the Big 12 championship, that would have been kind of like almost exceeding goals, you know what I'm saying? And so, you know, for us, but for what they did, for what they accomplished, what they did for the university, what they, you know, I mean, we're literally talking about why Iowa State didn't win 10 plus games here. Like, this, people have to, like, think, you know, like, we weren't talking about this stuff. Or, you know, they weren't, because I wasn't even in a Cyclone yet, but people weren't talking about this stuff 10 years ago, 8 years ago, 6 years ago. You know, this kind of just happened out the blue. And, you know, maybe for us it's going to just be a little bit harder to win a Big 12 title, you know? But in the end, I mean, we're competing. We're beating teams that we weren't beating before. You know, we weren't beating TCU faithfully. We weren't beating Texas faithfully. I don't think it was 2 times before we got this 3-game win streak that we only beat Texas like 2 times in like 20 plus years. So, I mean, we're doing things. The program's changed. You know, as fans, even me, you know, as a former player, you kind of get impatient. You know, you kind of you want it so bad, and I'm saying all this stuff because I want it so bad for the university. I want it so bad for the fans that had to go through all those trying years of and just brutal years of, you know, not even getting to a bowl game, kind of quote unquote being the laughing stock, you know, losing Kansas and stuff like that. You know, I want it so bad for the, especially the fans. And I know the players currently want it so bad, not only for themselves, for their families, for the coaching staff, for each other, but they want it so bad for the fans as well. They want people to rejoice and have this moment. And so I appreciate Brock Purdy. He's the all-time winning quarterback in Iowa State history. No matter what happens on the field, I mean, he beat the odds, you know. He beat the odds. Breece Hall, he basically kind of put Iowa State on his back almost offensively. Mm-hmm. Charlie Kolar, just outstanding person. I know Charlie played with him. You know, just being teammates with Charlie, I didn't know that he was going to be this good, you know. Just coming up and him being a young buck, people like Mike Rose, even the guys that transferred, Ashim Young. I hope those guys have phenomenal careers and wherever they go. Just because, man, they gave everything for the university, blood, sweat, tears. You know, they exhausted everything. These guys really, I guess we kind of changed how Iowa State gets looked, but they bumped it up another level. They raised the expectation. Like, we're talking about Iowa State was preseason top 10. There's no way in 2010 somebody would have told, if I was time traveling and I told Levi, Iowa State's going to be preseason top 10 in 2020. He'd probably laugh. 2010 Levi would probably laugh at me and chug whatever the Bush Light and be like, shut up, dude. You don't know what the hell you're talking about. But here we are in 2022 now talking about how Iowa State didn't exceed expectations because we went 7-6. Now, 7-6 could be deemed by other programs as pretty average, but I don't know if you know the history of Iowa State or even look into it, but it's not the greatest. Not even close. So
in fact, it's one of the worst.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? So
I think we're top 10 worst.
Among Power 5, I believe we'd be second worst after Kansas State.
Yeah, so I want to appreciate those guys. They up the standard. So now the next group, they got to up it a little more. And, you know, this thing, it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. You know, most teams are not going to be blessed with a Nick Saban-type turnaround. You know what I'm saying?
I think of, too, is like Lamar Jackson at Louisville, where for a few years, though, Louisville was like top five, whatever else. But, you know, we don't have a Lamar Jackson.
Right. You know what I'm saying?
But look where Louisville is now. They lost Lamar Jackson and they went right back to the shitter. So, like, you know, would you rather the slow buildup of six, mm-hmm. you know, 7-5, 8-4 type of three regular season, and then you start getting up into the regular 9-10 type of stuff or whatever? Yeah. Or would you be like top five for a few years and then you just shit your pants again? I mean, I would rather have our run personally.
Yeah, I mean, we got fans on Twitter bashing Brock Purdy like he isn't the all time winning.
Yeah, fuck that, man. That pissed me off when people were bashing Brock Purdy. Like, shut the fuck up.
Like, look, I get it. I was upset too after the game. I felt like we should have won the game. Felt like we were the better team almost in some aspects, but we didn't go out there and execute. We didn't get the job done, and for whatever reason, and you know what? That's, you know, that's life, and that it's going to happen like that. There's more failures than victories. I'll tell you that, unless you go to Alabama.
But they had
to fail a lot too. Let's not forget Alabama before Nick Saban.
Never forget that Alabama played Iowa State in a bowl game in 2001. So
yeah, I mean, you know, before Nick Saban, but in between what, Bear Bryant and Nick Saban,
they were kind of whatever. Yeah.
You know, they weren't a powerhouse. So, you know, it takes time. This stuff isn't easy, man. It's so, JD, you can, you can attest to this. It's so hard to win games. It's so hard. Like, I'm telling you, like, after games, like, these guys are tired on the bus. I don't care if it was a blowout. I don't care if it was a last-second victory. Like, it's so hard to win games, especially in college. But, like, these kids are going to class. They're waking up in the wee hours in the morning, getting home late at night, playing on Saturdays. Like, this is not easy business. They sign up for it, but don't get it twisted. This stuff isn't easy. So, you know, think about that type of stuff when you're bashing Brock Purdy, who's the all-time winning quarterback in Iowa State history. Or, you know, you're upset at Breece Hall because he chose to, you know, support his, you know, he gave his blood, sweat, and tears, you know, everything to the university, and he just didn't decide to play in a bowl game that we were already 7-5 in. Like, give me a break. Like, let's be honest, take a chill pill, look at yourself in the mirror. And I'm not talking to most Iowa State fans, because I know most Iowa State fans were very appreciative, but I'm just talking to the people that, you know, kind of got lost in the mix, and they forgot that, you know, it could be way worse.
And, but, you know, even though it didn't work out, you know how Brock Purdy went out in his career? Trying to put this team on the back and make a comeback. Like, I mean, the dude is a warrior to the very bitter end. And, yeah, it didn't work out. But that dude, he made a great play trying to scramble out of the box. And the Clemson, like, let's not take it away from the Clemson guy did a nice job to punch that ball out. I mean, yeah. It's not like Brock was just all over the place and the ball was hanging out there. I mean, he had it high and tight, and the Clemson guy just came around and punched it out of his hand. I mean,
all-time winningest quarterback. This is the all-time winningest class.
Oh yeah, easily, by a wide margin.
I mean, again, 4 years ago, this wasn't happening. You know, Alan Lazard's class.
These guys These guys never won fewer than seven games.
I mean, JD, let me ask you something. When did you win a freaking road game? A road game that you flew in. What year were you in?
Oh, you got me on the flu. Damn it all, man. All right, so first road game I won that we flew on was Texas Tech in 2017.
Was it not Akron?
Sorry, Akron.
Akron. That was his senior year.
My senior year, our first road win.
You had been
Sorry, actually, that was No, Iowa. Iowa sophomore year, but we drove. But getting on a plane was Akron. The second.
So before that, how many road wins had you won? Total.
Including Iowa.
Maybe a Kansas one at once. Yeah.
Driving and.
Zero plane road wins in 4 years.
So how many did you do driving?
One.
Iowa.
See? Like, what are we talking about here? One. You know? Like, I know it sucks. I'm telling you, it sucks. I want this so bad for our fans. Exactly. But, like, when you think about, like, you compare JD's and then you think about Brock Purdy, like, I'm just comparing that instance.
I mean, he blows me out of the water. He blows me out of the water. You know what I'm saying?
Like, we have a lot to be grateful for, especially with the coaching staff and Coach Campbell and, you know, these guys. Like, we've won games. Like, let's not get it twisted. They were this class that just ended was the all-time winningest class.
Mm-hmm.
Jake Hummel had played 63 games. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of games.
I think I played in 28, I don't know, or 30. I don't know. But
Jake Hummel played a shitload of games. You know. And he never won in his entire career, never won fewer than seven games.
That's pretty sweet.
Nobody even went 500. Nobody even finished at 500, much less than 500.
Hey, Levi, they have a winning conference record.
Actually, in the last three seasons, I think Iowa State is second in the conference in average, for Big 12 coaches. Matt Campbell is second in the Big 12 for average number of conference wins per season in his career, after Mike Gundy, and that's including your guys' first year, which he went 3-9. Now, granted, it was a good looking 3-9, but still 3-9 or whatever. Which is kind of funny, though, because when people think of Campbell, most people just kind of forget that 2016 exists.
I was there.
Like,
I was also there.
Had a lot of close losses that year, too. Yep. I'll never forget
that time that it was when Cole was doing the pod regularly when we revealed to Cole that he was on the same team as March 1 year because he just forgot.
Yeah.
Even Cole just forgot he was on the team that year.
Yeah, I vividly remember losing to Baylor, and we scored every touch. We literally scored a touchdown on every drive.
I got hurt
besides the last two drives, and we ended up losing the game on the last second field goal. I remember being up 17 on Oklahoma State and losing at Oklahoma State. They were a top 15 team. Like I remember losing to Kansas State, and we basically were going back and forth the whole game until the very end at home before we got screwed in Manhattan the next year. Like this stuff. I mean, I remember Baker Mayfield the year before we upset him coming to Iowa State on a Thursday night.
And Jaquan had a strip sack in that game. I remember that.
And they literally were neck and neck. You know, like this, you know, you could see it. You could watch the 2016 games. You know, besides the Iowa game where we got creamed, it was.
Which that was the first. That was the second game of Matt Campbell's entire career. Yeah,
when we also lost the Northern Iowa game, I was there for that too.
I was in Iceland for that. At 4 a.m.
Yeah. That had to suck watching us lose at 4 a.m.
But yeah. Hey. It wasn't awesome, but it was. But you know what the highlight of that game was though? Was Hakeem Butler's first career touchdown catch was ridiculous.
I was on the field for that too.
Phenomenal catch. Falling backwards one handed. It was great.
Well, I'll tell you what, all right, because we've been at this for an hour and a half.
We have. Yeah, you're right.
This is the last thing I would like to say because I think it's important. I hope no one mistakes my passion for anger or malice or anything negative towards these players, because at the end of the day, these kids are 22 at the oldest, or 23 if they're a fifth year. Some of them may be 24 because of all this COVID crap.
Chase Allen, yeah. I think he's 23 or 24, yeah.
Because I tell you what, at the end of the day, you got three of the probably this will be the case. I hope I do and I don't. I hope this is the case for this next 10 years that Brock Purdy, Breece Hall, and Mike Rose are three of the top 10 best players that have ever walked through that door. And Brock Purdy, I have to say, probably the kid with the most fortitude that I've ever seen in an Iowa State jersey, or pretty much, I don't know, it could be anything. I talked to that kid briefly a couple times. Very, very humble, has a lot of humility, has a lot of respect for his teammates and his coaches. And I mean, I would love to be like him when I grow up someday. So, I mean, again, I take that into account, and it's just, I want him to be the best. I hope he's going to the NFL. Hope he finds a home. Hope he has an awesome career. Hope it all works out. Absolutely. Breece, same thing. Mike, same thing. I just think something that I struggle with, because we talk about that it could always get worse. I think if we don't put our foot on the gas and look forward, we're always going to be like, oh, well, at least – so we went 7-6. Oh, but it could have been way worse. It could have been 3-9. It could have been 2-10. Or – could have been 10-2. Could have been 10-3. It could have been 11-2, you know, because that's where this program needs to go. And so that's what I think about when I'm talking about this stuff. So it's easy. So because I hate talking about the old days when we got our doors beaten in, man, because it did suck. This program is better than that. And so I don't want to talk about that. I mean, and take me for proof. I only talk about that 2017 year, and Mark just pointed out why. Because we had nothing to talk about. The only thing I could talk about in those first 4 years is we beat Iowa. It's the last time we beat Iowa. And they were 6-6 that year, and we were 2-10. So we beat Matt Campbell at Toledo, and we beat Iowa. That's it. So besides that, I ain't got shit to talk about. I really don't. But I know that our fan base is the most passionate I've ever seen, of course. I mean, and they're so invested in this program. They have been their entire lives. They finally have the success, and they want to hold on to it as long as they can. I get that. I'm with you because I lived it, and March lived it. March can attest to this too. We always like to take the good and the bad. We like to be appreciative but also want more, and it's that healthy balance. But, I mean, and I'm probably more on the aggressive side of wanting more. And March, he appreciates. Not that March doesn't want more, but he's always the first one to talk about how bad it used to be. And then I kind of realize, yeah, he's got a point. But I just think, you know, preseason rank 7, that, yeah, well, we have some of the best players that ever walked through the door, and could have been it was multiple factors. But like he said, do you know how hard it is to win a football game, man? It's not like basketball where you get 40 chances, man. It's not the NCAA tournament, man. I tell you what, it is. You got 100-plus people minimum that are striving to do one thing. And it takes everybody in that locker room. It takes the scout team. It takes the trainers, the wait staff, the GAs, the film staff. So much goes into it that 99% of the population will never understand quite how it is, because you work 365 days a year to get 12 guaranteed opportunities. And so it is easy to sit behind a computer and criticize. And that's why on Twitter, I always try to stay positive. I always want to be like, look, these guys played their hearts off, to play their ass off. And then we'll get down here and kind of vent a little bit, but still try to find the good and all the bad. And that's what I believe our job is. And I think we've done a good job at it, but also this team needs a kick in the ass. We're not afraid to do it because we know how capable they are, because we've seen it. And when they don't do it, it's kind of like when your parents say that you're disappointed. We're not angry. We're disappointed because we are your biggest cheerleaders. We want this program and this team to be the very, very best. So I'm excited for the offseason. I'm excited for spring ball. I'm excited to see these new guys come in, especially Hunter Deo, who is the top guy in Iowa, and I think he's three. He's number 37. He's ranked 37th in this, which I don't – you know what? Screw that. I've never paid attention to those stars and ratings. They're full of shit. A.J. Klein was like a no-star, and he's still playing in the NFL. So – you know, that's all I got to say. You know, I'm looking forward to next year. We're going to run it back. This coaching staff knows what the hell they're doing. All right. And hey, my hat's off to these seniors. I'm sorry you couldn't get that win. All right. But you guys left a hell of a footprint that has to be repeated, and the pressure's on. So that's how I want to close out the season.
Marchie, you got anything you want to say before we wrap up the podcast?
JD basically said everything, but again, winning games are not easy. It's not. Trust me. You can ask me and JD. You can ask me on Twitter, Instagram. They're not easy. It's not. And there's so much that has to go right to win a football game. I don't care if you got 100,000 five stars. I don't care if you got 20,000 zero stars. It's not easy. And then going into this offseason, man, like I said, we've just got to figure out, you know, what can we do better? And we've got to try and execute, you know. And I believe in the coaching staff. I mean, look how far we've come now. There's no reason for me to think that we can't achieve more. And so I would try to tell Iowa State fans to stay positive and, you know, be careful what you wish for, you know. It's not guaranteed that it's, you know, going to keep going like this. Like, you got to take it year by year by year. So, and again, I love all the fans too. You know, you're what makes this thing awesome too. At the end of the day, you're the atmosphere, everything. Iowa State fans is what makes this thing awesome. And then shout out to the basketball team last night. I don't even know how you score like 15 points in the second half and win. And I know we're not going to talk about the basketball team because it's been too long, but I want to shout them out too, because
we should talk about basketball next week though, because
yeah,
they're a story, man.
Yeah, I mean, I've probably only seen like 1.5, maybe 2 games, but from what I've seen,
it's appointment television, man. It's good. Yeah. Shit. It is good. A good time. That defense is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. They're so good. The offense needs some work, need to get better shooters, or need to start knocking down shots. But anyways, we'll wrap her up for this week. So thank you for JD and March. And then thank you for everyone for listening to Down the Pipe throughout this football season. We're not going anywhere. We're still doing episodes and all that stuff. But, you know, wrapping up kind of another football season and getting and going into spring football and all that good stuff. So everybody, thank you for listening to this episode of Down the Pipe and Natty Light. I'm Levi Stevenson for JD Wagner and Marchie Murdoch. Everybody have a great rest of your week. Great weekend. Go Cyclones.
See you guys.